There we go. Okay. Okay, sorry, take some time to set up. So today what we're going to do is we're going to actually begin solving systems of linear equations. The technique I'll describe is, the goal is to take a set of linear equations. That means equations where you maybe have m variables, and the way the variables appear in the equation is linearly, meaning they appear in separate terms from other variables, and at worst, they're multiplied by a constant. So let me do an explicit example. 2x plus 2y is equal to 3. What makes it linear is there are your variables, they occur in different terms, and at worst, they're multiplied by a constant. You can have terms that don't involve the variables at all, but those numbers are moved over to the right-hand side of the equation when we write the equations in standard form. So what I'm going to describe is how to solve a bunch of equations like this. It's not the same thing as solving quadratic equations or other sort of equations that you're more used to solving. They're barely the simplest kinds of equations, but what the problem is we may have lots of them, and we want to develop a systematic technique for solving them. So I'll start by reviewing what linear systems are and their solution sets. And then I'll show you how we solve them in linear algebra. It's going to be different than the high school technique wherein you take the first equation, you use it to eliminate one variable, or actually to express one variable in terms of the other variables, that you substitute into subsequent equations, and you pick another variable to eliminate. You keep doing that until you get down to you run out of equations and you can't eliminate any more variables. The variables that remained are called the free variables in your solution, and everything can be expressed in terms of them. All the preceding variables can be expressed in terms of your free variable. Well, that process works great if you have two equations and two unknowns. It only takes like one step to solve for the first variable. But if you have like 10 equations and 18 unknowns, the first step, once you solve for, say, x1, would be to substitute that expression for x1 into 9 more equations. And then you can eliminate a second variable. So it starts off simple, but when you have anything other than a very small set of equations, there's lots of substituting that goes on, and that's a good place to make errors. What we're going to do is develop a technique that's going to seem much more strenuous at first, but in fact, our algorithm is going to make it really efficient. Our strategy is going to be, well, you have a given set of equations. You want to get to a set of equations that describe the solution. X1 is equal to 3, X2 is equal to 4, etc. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the equations. Rather than concentrating on variables, we're going to manipulate the equations until we get the equations of the solution. So instead of working one equation at a time, one variable at a time, we're constantly operating on the set of equations. Once I show you how that's done, then we'll make it much more efficient. We'll convert the whole algorithm into working with matrices. And then once that's established, we'll have a real rapid way of solving large linear systems. Okay, so first of all, a set of linear equations just means, let me give you a typical example. A11, x1 plus dot 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 plus a1m, xm. I'm using our notation we've developed. Coefficients are labeled by which equation they're in and the variable that they're tied to. And we put numbers on the right-hand side. That would be one equation. If I had any such equations, it would look like this. Dot 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 plus the coefficient in the nth equation of the mth variable, the AMM equals BN. All right, so that would be N equations, M unknowns, and what we refer to as an N by M linear system. All right, these sort of things we're studying now. And our goal, as we saw in the preceding lecture, is that solution sets of linear equations are always hyperplanes. Solution sets of multiple linear equations are all intersections of hyperplanes, but intersections of hyperplanes are just smaller hyperplanes, hyperplanes of lower dimension. So we'll always be trying to express, once we've found the solution of such a system, we'll try to express it in this geometric fashion as a point plus varying distances along a particular set of directions. That will fill out, in this case, as long as these directions are independent of one another, this would a form like this would actually create a hypersurface that's of a flat hypersurface or hyperplane of dimension m minus one. Okay, so and just to remind you that the geometric objects that correspond to hyperplanes are points when you just have that initial starting point in your construction. You get a line if you have a point and a direction from which you can depart from that point. You'll get a plane if you have two directions from which you can depart from a given point. But in more general, a general hyperplane is just something of that form. All right, and then the point of hyperplanes is that when we solve systems of linear equations, we only have two options. We either don't have any solutions at all, or our solution will be a set of this form. And our goal right now is to take a linear system and figure out if it has solutions, and if it does have solution, what hyperplane is it? Okay, so move this up a little bit. So I've already marked how we solve linear systems in high school. In fact, it's not restricted to linear systems. You can solve nonlinear equations too by the same method. Use one equation to eliminate a variable, resubstitute that into subsequent equations, and figure out another variable that you can express. We're not going to do it that way. What we're going to do is we're going to manipulate the equations rather than the variables. And we'll keep manipulating them until we actually reach the equations of the solution. All right, so first question is, well, what can we do to equations that will not change their solution? I'll give you three basic operations. They should already be familiar to you because you've no doubt solved lots of equations already. But we're going to single them out. Now, first, so here's just a pair of equations, two equations, two unknowns. What can I do to this set of equations? Well, one thing I can do is I can change the order. That's not going to affect the solution. And it looks really trivial, but eventually this operation is going to be more useful than it looks here. Here it looks like I'm just reordering things. It's not going to change the solution. But when I get to a matrix rendition of this, this is going to have the effect of changing two rows in a matrix. So it's a little more substantial than you would think, guess from this. Another thing we can do to a set of equations, look at the second equation. It's both sides are divisible by two. And so common thing you do when working with equations is you simplify them by dividing out common factors that appear on both sides. That doesn't change the solution. And so that's another sort of operation we can do to a system of equations that will not change the solution. Here, I want you to understand this as we have a set of equations, we look at one of them and we replace it by a multiple of itself. And then finally, here's another common operation. This may be a little bit new to you, the way it's stated, but it's a familiar operation. Let me introduce it more slowly in the way that you've typically seen this operation used. If you have an equation like x plus y is equal to 3 and x minus y is equal to 2, well, one way to speed the solution of this is to simply add the first equation to the second equation. Then you would get 2x, y plus minus y is 0, and equals 5. And so I can add equations together, and now I have three equations. But the point of this operation is that I can think of replacing that second equation with this equation that I derived from it in the first equation. Since I derived this from these two equations, it's also true. I did that by adding these two equations. But the other thing I could have done, if I had these two equations, I could recover the second equation simply by subtracting this equation from this sum. And so these are also manipulations you can perform on sets of equations. They don't change the solution. And here what the rule I want to give is that you can take an equation and you can replace it not only with a sum of another equation, but because you're also allowed to scalar multiply equations or multiply equations by numbers, we can actually replace one of the equations by its sum with a multiple of another equation. All right, so here, the first operation we could do was changing the order. Here we have multiply equations by numbers, and here's the more complicated operation where we replace an equation by its sum with a multiple of another equation. All right, so what can we do with these operations? Let me just reestablish my notation. If you see this in the next slide, it means I'm switching the order of equations. If you see this, I'm scalar multiplying. I'm multiplying each an equation by a number. And here I'm doing that replacement of a matrix with it, or an equation with its sum with another equation. All right, so here's the first example. Two equations and two unknowns. I'm going to manipulate those equations. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take this set of equations, and I'm going to replace the second equation with its sum with the first. So x plus x is 2x. Y minus y is 0, so it's not going to appear. 1 plus 3 is 4. So you see, these operations are easy to perform, even this more complicated one. And we get a new set of equations, which is actually a little bit simpler than what we started off with, because in this second equation, now the variable x is almost isolated. Let's complete that isolation by doing multiplication of an equation by a number. Let's send equation 2 to 1 half equation 2, divide both sides by 2, and you get x is equal to 2. All right, we now know what x has to be to get this solution. We'll need to figure out y as well. But I'm not going to substitute in here. I'm going to work strictly with this process of doing operations that don't change the solution to manipulate the equations. So the next step I'm going to do is I'm going to take this first equation and I'm going to subtract from it the second equation. Then I'll get x minus x. But I'll also have y minus 0y, so I'll be left with y, and then 1 minus 2 is going to be negative 1. Sorry, my cursor's on that. So how did I get this second equation? X minus x is 0, y minus 0y is y, and 1 minus 2 is minus 1. So it's easy to write. And now I'll do one more kind of stupid operation, but just to get this, my solution stated with the variables appearing in the natural order, x followed by y, we get the solution. Okay, so what you've seen I've done here is I've solved this system of linear equations. I've gotten to the solution, not by looking at the variables, but rather by manipulating the set of equations using operations that don't change the solution set. And so, these two equations, these two sets of equations have the same solution, but this one is readily identified as the solution. Okay, so Now, what remains for me to explain is how to make this process efficient and second of all, to explain why I chose to do this operation at this point of time. I always have three operations I can perform on any given equation. What determines the sequence of operations that will actually lead me to the equations of the solution? Well, that's going to be easiest to describe when I convert back into a matrix reformulation of the same algorithm. So we already know a big part of what we've developed so far with respect to matrices and linear equations is that if we have a set of equations, we can reformulate that, those equations, as a matrix equation, right? We look at the coefficients that appear on the right-hand side. We encapsulate them in a n by m matrix if we started off with n equations and m unknowns. But then we also can capture the variables in a matrix, and we can capture the inhomogeneous terms, the numbers that appear on the right-hand side. We can capture those in a matrix as well. And when we do so, and we know how to multiply matrices together, it turns out that this matrix equation, component by component, exactly replicates the original linear system. Okay, that said, I am not going to solve this matrix equation directly. I'm still going to think mostly about solving the original linear system, but I'm going to use the ideas that I can take the data that specifies a linear system. I can associate matrices to that data. So here's how we'll do that. If you have a linear system, I'm going to write it in matrix form, but remember, once you know the coefficient matrix and the numbers on the right-hand side, you can immediately go back to the original set of equations. Rather, what we're going to do is we're going to form a new matrix. It's going to be the coefficient matrix for the linear system, and then it's going to have an additional column. That additional column is going to be formed from the numbers that appear on the right-hand side of all the equations. And it's actually this object that we're going to manipulate until we reach the solution. Okay, quick example, three equations and three unknowns. Here's the augmented matrix that corresponds to this linear system. All the information contained in the equations is actually contained in this form here. You can read off the equations. So think of these three columns as corresponding to the three variables. 1 times x1, 2 times x2, minus 1 times x3 is equal to 2. 1 times x1, minus 1 times x2, 1 times x3 is equal to 1. So not only can you take the data of a specific system of equations and encapsulate it in an augmented matrix, you can go back to the equations as well. So here's what we're going to do. We'll take a linear system, we'll convert its data into an augmented matrix. Then what I'm going to do, this second step is the difficult one, it takes a full lecture to describe. I'll tell you how you take this augmented matrix, systematically manipulate it until you reach the augmented matrix of the solution. Now, what's nice about that is the variables have disappeared. And all I'm doing is manipulating numbers in a rectangular array. So the arithmetic is just going to be arithmetic that carries out this calculation. And then once we get the augmented matrix of the solution, we'll convert back to equations and we'll get the equations of the solution. So we'll actually have the solution expressed in the simplest form possible. And then finally, we'll take those equations and we'll try to realize the points in variable space that satisfy the equation, we'll try to identify them as a hyperplane. This will be pretty straightforward as well. It's actually step two is the part that it requires a lot of explanation, but it'll be easy to understand. It's just that you can see how much work is going to go. You'll have to do this solving linear systems via this matrix technique is much faster than the substitution method, but it also requires a bit more explanation. All right, so the things that we in this step here, where I'm changing an augmented matrix to an augmented matrix of the solution, the underlying idea here is that we've seen that we can change equations and not change their solution. But equations correspond to augmented matrices. So we can equally well change augmented matrices so that the when we convert back to equations, we still have the same solution set. What I want to describe is, so if you go from equations, you go to an augmented matrix, and then, but you can also do what we call an elementary operation. Do an elementary operation on these equations, and you get a new equations with the same solution. But you can also convert that to an augmented matrix. So you get a new augmented matrix. So what you could do, if you want to know how the augmented matrix changed, you can convert back to equation, do the operation, and then you get a new augmented matrix. What I'm going to tell you is how to do that directly. So we don't have to go back to the equations. We're just manipulating these augmented matrices. But that's going to be really easy. The analogs of these operations, interchanging equations, multiplying equations by numbers, et cetera, those are going to be readily implemented directly on these augmented matrices. All right, so in that augmented matrix, the way we get the various rows of it is we scan across a given equation and we just pull out the coefficients, put it on the left, and the number that appears on the right-hand side, we put in the right column. If we change the order of equations then, what happens is we just change the order of the rows of the matrix. We have x plus y is equal to 2, x minus y is equal to 1. Well, that would correspond to the augmented matrix 1, 1, 2, 1, minus 1, 1. If I interchange the order of these equations, x minus y is equal to 1, x plus y is equal to 2. Well, that's just going to be 1, minus 1, 1, and 1, 1, 2. All right, so here I took two sets of equations and their corresponding augmented matrices. What I want to point out here is I could have gone directly from this to this by simply interchanging the rows. All right, so that's natural enough. And also, when we replace an equation by a multiple by a number, what does that do to the augmented matrix? Well, every coefficient, if I multiply this equation by 2, x is going to be multiplied by 2, y is going to be multiplied by 2, and the number on the right-hand side is going to be multiplied by 2. So each number in the corresponding row is going to get multiplied by 2. And so, but now, if you think of this row as a vector, what we've actually done is we scalar multiplied that vector by a number. We multiply each component of the vector by the same number, and that's scalar multiplication. So that's how we'll implement this operation. And then finally, another thing we could do to equations is we can replace an equation by sum with a multiple of another equation. And what that's going to mean is, since each equation corresponds to a row vector, we can replace an equation, or we can replace a row of the augmented matrix by its vector sum with a scalar multiple of another row. All right, so let me give you a notation for that. This is row interchange. It corresponds to changing the order of equations. This is going to be scalar multiplication of the row vector corresponding to the ith row of a matrix. And that corresponds to multiplying both sides of the equation by a number. And then finally, this operation here, where we replace a row with its sum with a scalar multiple of another row, that corresponds to replacing an equation by its sum with a multiple of another equation. All right, so what's nice about this, though, maybe it's a little bit strenuous to see the connection with the original operations we performed on equations, but given that, these are really simple to perform directly on an augmented matrix. We don't have to manipulate variables at all. Let me just show you real quickly. Here's a 2x2 linear system. Let's read off its augmented matrix. 1 times x plus 1 times y is equal to 3. 1 times y minus 1 times x minus y is equal to 1. All right, so now I'm going to manipulate this guy rather than manipulate the equations. So the first thing I'll do is I'll subtract the first row from the second row. Now that's row 2 plus minus 1 times row 1. And what will happen, we can do this in place. I'm working on row 2, and I'm going to subtract row 1 from it. So from the first component, 1 minus 1 is 0. Minus 1 minus 1 is negative 2. 1 minus 3 is negative 2. So you can work directly on the paper, and you're not moving variables around. You're just working on this augmented matrix. All right, the next step. Here we have a common factor here. So this basically is 1, 1, the entire vector multiplied by the number negative 2. So to simplify that, let's divide out that factor of negative 2 from both terms. I multiply the whole row by minus 1 half, and I get that. All right, now let's see. Now I've got a new augmented matrix. What I'm going to do to this now is I'm going to clear out this entry above that bottom one, and I'll do so by subtracting the second row from the first. All right, let's do it. 1 minus 0 is 1. See, notice I'm operating on the first equation. So this is the guy I'm going to replace. 1 minus 0 is 1. 1 minus 1 is 0. 3 minus 1 is 2. Okay, good. Now I've got another augmented matrix, which, if I converted to equations, would have the same solutions as the original system. So let's do that. Take this equation, or this augmented matrix, and convert it back into equations. First column corresponds to the first variable. Second column corresponds to the second variable. So we have 1 times x plus 0 times y is equal to 2, or simply x is equal to 2. 0 times x plus 1 times y is equal to 1, or simply y is equal to 1. And you see what I've done. I've taken the original system, and I've worked it out to get the equations of the solution. But rather than working on the equations directly and always writing the variables down, I get the data, and I manipulate that data until I get it in the form that I'll regard as the augmented matrix of the solution. And I just convert back to equations to get the actual answer. All right, now, the last step in my program was actually to express that solution as a hyperplane. In this case, it's kind of trivial because we only have one value of x and one value of y that's going to be allowable if this pair of equations to be satisfied. And that solution set, where x is equal to 2, and y is equal to 1, that corresponds to a single point, 2, 1, inside my space of variables, which is, I started off with two variables, so I have, this is a single point in the entire space of variables that will satisfy the equation. Just put this in parentheses, and then it is a hyperplane, but it's a trivial kind of hyperplane. It's where we have a single starting point, t0, but we don't have any additional directions from which we can depart from this. A point is the simplest example of a hyperplane, but in general, we could have additional terms here. What those additional terms would mean is that we have more than one solution to our linear system. All right, we'll see plenty of examples of that. Let's now concentrate on the meat of the problem, which is for me to explain Why did I do this operation first? Why did I do this operation next? And why did I do that operation? I'll explain that. The other thing that I need to explain is, okay, I got to this augmented matrix. How did I recognize it as a stopping point for all these manipulations of the augmented matrix? I stopped at this point and converted directly to equations. How did I recognize this as the augmented matrix of the solution? Okay, well, we'll have to explain that. I'll have to explain the order and choice of operations, and I'll have to explain how we recognize when we've reached this augmented matrix of the solution. Well, I'm going to answer the second question first. I'll tell you what the goal is and how to recognize it, and then we'll worry about how to get there. Okay, so what this is going to entail, of course, is recognizing a matrix of a particular form as being the augmented matrix of your solution. So I'm going to now highlight some visual elements to look for in a matrix that will tell you, once we organize things, exactly what the augmented matrix of a solution should look like. So first concept is the notion of pivot. It's not a hard concept, but it's a term that I'll be throwing about all the time. A pivot is the first non-zero entry in a row. So 0, 1, 2, 1, 1, 0, 0, 2, 1, 1, minus 1, 0, 0. Okay, so there's a 3x4 matrix. Let me underline the pivots. In the first row, there's the first non-zero entry. In the second row, there's the first non-zero entry. In the third row, that's the third, the first non-zero entry. All right, so that's all that word means. There are three pivots in this matrix. There's one in each row. And we just pick out the first one that, as we read from left to right, we pick out the first non-zero number. To describe the augmented matrix of the solution, the key point is to recognize the pattern that these pivots fall into in the matrix. And that pattern, the essential one, is called rho epsilon form. All right, so so here I just gave you an example of identifying pivots. And here's the crucial, the first half of a crucial identification. A matrix is in row echelon form if the pivots in the upper rows always occur to the left of pivots in the rows below. This matrix here is not in row echelon form because here's a pivot in an upper row. I go down to the second row, and the pivot is moved off to the left rather than the right. Or let me phrase it exactly as it's stated here. Here's a second row. If I go to the upper row, this pivot is occurring off to the right rather than off to the left. That would match this definition. So what we're stipulating here, effectively, is the pivots, if you have a matrix in row echelon form, the pivots form sort of a downward staircase. You may have large skips, but if you have a pivot here, if it's in row echelon form, you can't have a pivot over here. It's got to be off to the right. That would be the next pivot. So you have nothing but zeros up to that point. And then the pivot in the row beyond that, it's got to occur off to the right. And so you would have nothing but zeros up to this point. When you get a matrix that is mostly zeros in this corner and mostly non-zero numbers up in this corner, then you get a matrix in row echelon form. Okay, so this matrix in row echelon form? Any guesses? Yes, it is. So notice the staircase. Consistently, as I move down the matrix, the pivots are moving off to the right. This matrix is not, because as I move down the matrix, Here we got a problem. This guy, as I descend in the matrix, the pivot has moved off to the left. Not like what happened in the exubs, but that's not in row echelon form. And that's it. That's all we're looking for. The pattern in which the pivot occurs. We need it to be this descending staircase going from the upper left to the lower right. All right, now, changing a matrix into row echelon form is the first half of the algorithm I'm about to describe. But let me give you the second half too, because this will be the final form of the augmented matrix of a solution. A matrix is in reduced row echelon form if, first of all, it's got to be in row echelon form. You need this downward staircase, but we have some additional requirements. The pivots can't be arbitrary numbers like here. Here the pivot is 2. Here's a pivot is 1. There's a pivot is 3. What we require for reduced row echelon form is the pivots have to have value 1. And moreover, if a column contains a pivot, we want that pivot to be the only non-zero entry in that column. So if I look above a pivot or below a pivot in that matrix, I want to see nothing but zeros, except for the pivot itself. Let's do some examples. Okay, so this matrix is in row echelon form. You see how the pivots are descending. All the pivots are equal to 1, that's good. But if you look above the pivot in the third row, I have some non-zero entries. So this matrix is almost in reduced row echelon form. The problem is these entries there. And if I simply made them zeros, then I would get a matrix in reduced row echelon form. But be aware though, is that if you're thinking about changing this matrix into another equivalent matrix that would have the same solution set, you can't simply say, oh, I have a 1 here, let me just make it a 0 and think you're working towards solving the equation. No, you've changed the augmented matrix and you've also changed the equations you're working with as well. So if we want to take this matrix that's not in reduced row echelon form and get to a matrix in reduced row echelon form, the way to do that is to apply the operations that don't change the solution set, not just zeroing out things that you don't like. Okay, but at least now you can see how one might do this. If a pivot was not equal to 1, what could you do to make it equal to 1? Let me give you an example. Let's look at this matrix. What could I do to this row so I can get that pivot equal to 1? Multiply it by 1/2, right? That 1/2 times 2 would equal 1. And then now that new pivot is 1, and this just becomes 1/2. But I've done an operation that doesn't change the solution set. So that would be a legitimate way to actually, if I had a pivot that wasn't equal to 1, I could easily make it equal to 1. All right, so the strategy then is going to be, I guess I got more examples of this. This matrix is in reduced row echelon form. And it's, again, for this particular matrix, it's easy to see why this should be the solution, the augmented matrix of the solution. Because if we write out the equations corresponding to that augmented matrix, it's going to look like a solution. X1, so think of first column corresponds to the first variable, second variable, third column corresponds to the third variable. Reading off the equation for the first row is x1 plus 0 times x2 plus 0 times x3 equals 2. The second row is telling us that 0 times x1 plus x2 plus 0 is equal to 1, or simply x2 is equal to 3. And the third row is telling us that x3 is equal to 4. So here we have a matrix, it's in reduced row echelon form. Pivots are descending in the right way. They're all equal to 1. And above and below pivots, I only have zeros. And when I convert back to equations, yeah, indeed, it does look like a solution vector. We've specified numbers for each variable. All right. So there's an example. Here's an equation that's not in reduced row echelon form. It is in row echelon form. There are the pivots, but the pivots aren't equal to one. And indeed, above this pivot, I have a non-zero number. And this is not even in row echelon form. This matrix is in row echelon form, but it's not in reduced row echelon form because my pivot here is not equal to one, nor is it equal to one below. And then finally, here's an example of a matrix that is in reduced row echelon form. You can have numbers appearing in columns, but since these numbers here, there's no pivot in this column. Here's a pivot, here's a pivot, here's a pivot. This fourth column doesn't have a pivot, so it's allowed to have non-zero numbers. Let me, I guess I'm going through more examples here. Here, this is in row echelon form. Check the criteria. It's in row echelon form. Pivots are all equal to one. Above and below pivots, I only have zeros. That's row echelon form. This is in row echelon form as well. Okay, so we're going to be looking for augmented matrix of this type. Notice that this matrix, unlike the preceding examples, there's no identity matrix here. Let me think of it as an augmented matrix. Let's say it's 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1. I'm going to think of an augmented matrix. So I'm going to insert this vertical line there. And then I have 0, 1, 1, 2, and the last row is 0, 0, 0, 0. All right, so this is in reduced row echelon form. It should be the augmented matrix of the solution. So what does the solution look like? X1 is equal to 1. That's coming from the first row. X2, 0 times X1, 1 times X2 plus 1 times X3 is equal to 2. And the last row is just saying 0 times X1, 0 times X2, 0 times X3 is equal to 0, or simply 0 is equal to 0. All right, so that's my solution, but it's not the way I like to see the solution presented, because all three variables are occurring. So what we tend to do is we take the variables with a higher index and we put them on the opposite side. And now I'll write down a solution vector, x equals, well, x1 has to equal 1. X2 has to equal 2 minus the third component. And the third component, I don't have any equation for it specifically, so I'll leave it alone. And then we can write this vector as 1, 2, 0 plus x3 times 0, no x3 here. We get a x3 with a minus sign in the second component, and the third component we get 1. Notice we have a line, right? Every vector in the solution set can be expressed as a vector where we start at a given point and we stray from that vector. X3 is undetermined. It's a free parameter in this solution. So every solution vector is a point plus some number times another vector. And so it is a hyperplane. In fact, it's a line. So in a nutshell, this is basically the technique we're going to follow. We're going to take a set of equations, convert to augmented matrix, manipulate that augmented matrix using operations that do not change the solution set until we reach a matrix in reduced row echelon form. Then what we'll do is we'll convert back to equations and try to express our solution as a points on a hyperplane rather than isolating on variables. We want to think of our solutions as being particular vectors rather than particular values of the coordinates. Okay, so let's see. Now we come to the actual algorithm. The algorithm by which I'm going to take an arbitrary matrix and I'm going to put it first in row echelon form, and then I'll do further manipulations to get it in a reduced row echelon form. When I reach reduced row echelon form, that's when I stop and go back to equations. All right, so here's the idea. We'll convert equations to augmented matrix. We'll use row operations that have the same effect as the elementary operations we used on equations to convert systematically the augmented matrix we start with to the augmented matrix of the solution, and then we convert back to equations. And then the last step will be to reinterpret our solution vectors as vectors. All right, so what have I got? I got 3 minutes left. I'm going to stop here because once we start, I just start describing these operations, you'll see that you can do this all visually, just manipulating the numbers in rows of the matrix. But I'll delay that presentation until Friday.